came to us from our pianist at First Church. And she, I don't know what it was in the sermon, there was something in the sermon she heard that day, this is several weeks ago, that reminded her of the story of the time when Elisha had prayed for the Syrian army, all the soldiers, to go blind. And she just wanted to hear a sermon about that. I have no idea why. So I looked at this story today. I read it again, not today, this week. I looked at the story again, and I thought, wow, this is a perfect time for this story. And so we're going to take up the story of 2 Kings chapter 6, beginning at verse 8 today. Now, the background to this story, you need to know a little bit of background. It's set in the time of the divided kingdom of Israel. So you have Judah in the south and Israel in the north. King Ahab of the northern kingdom of Israel has recently died, and you have the young and inexperienced Joram as king in his place. Elisha is the prophet. The nation of Syria to the north and the northern kingdom of Israel are in a constant state of war. Ben-Hadad, the king of Syria at the time, was taking advantage of the recent death of Ahab and was seeking to take back some of the territory he had recently lost. He had set up a stealthy plan of attacks which were constantly failing, and he suspects treachery in his camp. It is here that we pick up our story in 2 Kings chapter 6, beginning at verse 8. Now the Syrian, see if I can get this to advance. There we go. Oh. Now the king of Syria was making war against Israel, and he consulted with his servant, saying, "My camp will be in such and such a place, and the man of God," that's Elisha, "sent to the king of Israel, saying, 'Beware that you do not pass this place, for the Syrians are coming down there.' Then the king of Israel sent someone to the place of which the man of God had told him. Thus he warned him, and he was watchful there, not just once or twice. Therefore the heart of the king of Syria was greatly troubled by this thing, and he called his servants and said to them, 'Will you not show me which of us is for the king of Israel?' And one of his servants said, 'None, my lord, O king, but Elisha the prophet who is in Israel tells the king of Israel the words that you speak in your bedroom.'" Now, I notice that these private conversations were in the most sacred and secret place of the king of Syria, and no one would know this. No one could know this. Not even his closest men. And yet Elisha knew and told the king. In the ancient world, it was not uncommon for the kings to have around them a group of advisors, including a prophet or two. But it seemed in Ben-Hadad's case, the prophet of his enemy knew way too much. He thought for sure there was someone in his camp who was leaking secrets. And he hears about Elisha. He has identified public enemy number one. The war is no longer against Israel. The war now is against Elisha, who's messing everything up. And an attempt is made to locate the prophet of Israel and to take him out. So upon finding out Elisha's whereabouts, Ben-Hadad sends a huge army to Dothan, where Elisha lives. Now, Dothan is a small town about 10 miles north and a little bit east of Samaria. Samaria is the capital city of Israel. The attack takes place in the black of night, and the army lays siege to the city. Very early in the morning, Elisha's young servant awakes and discovers the city is surrounded by the army of Syria, and he freaks out. Completely loses it. And we in verse 15, just a little bit later. Well, am I doing something wrong here? There it is. That's 16. There it is. And when the servant of man of God arose early and went out, there was an army surrounding the city with horses and chariots. And his servant said to him, "Alas, my master, what shall we do?" Should have more exclamation points there. So he answered, this is Elisha, "Do not fear, for those who are with us are more than those who are with them." And the servant looks around. He sees the entire army of the Syrians around this little tiny town. Not bigger than 25 acres. That's how big this town is. It's a walled town, though. It's probably got about 1,000 inhabitants inside. And he's like, those who are with us are more than those who are with them. Elisha, I think you need a knock on the head. Maybe you're not quite awake yet. The servant couldn't see what the prophet saw. And this is the first instance of blindness recorded in our story today. There's nothing wrong with the servant's eyes. There is something wrong with his spirit. His blindness is spiritual blindness. He doesn't see the realities that are right there in front of him because he is spiritually blind to them. And so, the prophet prays. Elisha prayed and said, "Lord, I pray, open his eyes that he may see." Then the Lord opened the eyes of the young man, and he saw. And behold, the mountain was full of horses and chariots of fire all around Elisha. In our spiritual journey with God, it would be well for us to keep this story in mind. There are times we feel completely surrounded, ready to be defeated. The end is near. And so on. As bad as blindness is, spiritual blindness is far worse. Whether we are blind or see, we all come into terrible situations in our life. But spiritually blind people, when those bad times come, they freak out. They are not aware of a very important spiritual reality, that God has foreseen this, and he is there with his legion, ready to defend you. This is a very important thing that we need to see when we find ourselves in conflict, whether it's conflict in our home, or conflict at work, or conflict at church or in our neighborhood. School. If we don't see the army of God around us, we will think either I must fight or die. But there is another reality that our eyes need to be open to. And if you can't see God, there is a solution here. There is a solution for you. And that solution is prayer. One of the many problems that plagues the church of Laodicea, the church of the end time, they think they're fine. They think they can see. But there is a serious reality that they are totally blind to. Jesus says they are poor, wretched, miserable, blind, and naked. They cannot see what the Lord sees. Another example of spiritual blindness is found in Jesus' story in Matthew 7. Let's see if I can bring that up here. I don't know, guys. This doesn't seem to want to work for me. There we go. Many will say to me in that day, Lord, Lord, have we not prophesied in your name, cast out demons in your name, and done many wonders in your name? So they call Jesus Lord, right? They're saying this to Jesus. And they do all these cool things in his name. But then Jesus declares to them, I never knew you. Depart from me, you who practice lawlessness. This is spiritual blindness. We're in the groove with Jesus, or so we think. I feel good when I'm at church on Sabbath. I pay my tithe. I do Christian service. I don't even say bad words. But it is possible to have all of that and still hear the words, I never knew you. And that's because all those things, though they are good, is not the same thing as having the heart, which is not good, changed by Jesus Christ. To having a change from the inside out. To have him work where no one else sees, but only God. You aren't even aware of what's inside, but he is. And he is working there, and we need to cooperate with him. And the only way to cooperate with him is if we become spiritually seeing. These people think they're good with the Lord, but they do not realize he doesn't even know them. Their wicked deeds have blinded them. And the way through spiritual blindness is revealed here in the story of Elisha. Elisha prayed for his servant. Yeah. He prayed for his servant. If Laodicea is blind, we need to pray for her. We do not need to point out her blindness. Jesus has already done this. We need to pray. We need not mock her nakedness, but rather we need to clothe her. And neither should we condemn her lukewarmness. Rather, we should do our part to heat things up, not with conflict, but with our influence and our love. In 2 Kings 6:17, Elisha prayed and said, Lord, I pray, open his eyes that he may see. This is something that only the Lord can do. No amount of talking on our part. Now, Elisha could have described the angels, could have described the chariots and things like that, but that is pointless because that only convinces the mind he sees something. But Elisha's servant needed to see it for himself. And the only way for that to take place is if we pray. Elisha prayed, and now the servant sees. A mountainside full of angelic beings suddenly becomes visible to him. It wasn't that they just suddenly showed up. They were there all along. This band of angels is constantly around us as well. Even the weakest child of God has by his or her side all the help one could ever need. Satan's forces are powerless to win when we pray and see. What is interesting about our story is that the Syrians are also blind. Even when the eyes of the servant were open, the angels are not visible to the enemy army. They are still blind. As human beings, we are blind to the realities of God, and we may think we know, but when compared to Elisha, compared to the prophet of God, compared to the one who truly sees, we know nothing. When faced with problems bigger than us, the blind freak out. They become unglued, unhinged. They can't believe what's happening to them. If God were really a God of love, they say. He wouldn't let this happen. These are blind. They are not seeing clearly. God allows the enemy to attack us in the night for one purpose, so that when day breaks and we see the enemy sneaking up on us, we may pray and see the reality of God and the deliverance of God. The Syrians attack Elisha. They charge the city, intent on capturing their greatest enemy, a single old man who alone sees. I wonder what you would have done if you were Elisha. Again, it says, Elisha prayed. There we go. So when the Syrians came down to him, Elisha prayed to the Lord and said, "Strike this people, I pray, with blindness." This is a second blindness, isn't it? They are already blind to the realities of God, but this blindness is not a spiritual blindness, but a physical one. And God struck them with blindness according to the word of Elisha. It's very interesting. How merciful. I wonder what would have happened if Elisha had put a period right here. Oh Lord, strike this people. What would have happened to them? That would be it. It's over. They would have been destroyed. But notice what he prays for. He doesn't pray that they be destroyed. He prays that they would be turned blind. Wow. That's a great option. I mean, all things considered, if you were given the choice between blindness or death, which would you choose? I don't know which one I would choose, but I don't know. At least with blindness, if the Lord kills you, it's over, right? But with blindness, at least you got another chance. I wonder why Elisha prayed for blindness. You ever think about that? How unlike the request of the 12 disciples when they were leaving Samaria after they had rejected Jesus. And they came to Jesus embarrassed and dealing with these feelings of rejection. Shall we call fire down from God and destroy these people? They said to Jesus. How unlike them is Elisha's request. Lord, strike these people with blindness. It's an effective and merciful request. Effective because the soldiers can no longer fight. You can't fight an enemy you can't see. So the threat is over. It's merciful because, well, at least the angels who stood around the countryside surrounding the enemy of Syria were prepared for battle. If Elisha had asked for them to be destroyed, they would have been destroyed. Period. But Elisha asks for blindness. And what happens next in our story is a lesson for all Christians everywhere. To the Syrians, Elisha was an enemy. But to Elisha, the Syrians were children, ignorant that they belonged to God. They could not see that. They could not see that there was an army around them ready to defend them should they call upon the name of the Lord.
Elisha's battles were not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against Satan and his evil host. The Syrians needed the God of Israel. And even though the Syrian general Naaman, remember Naaman? The leprous layman had long been witnessing of the healing powers of Israel's God in Syria. I mean, the prophet had actually healed the general of the army that was attacking them. What a traitor! But what a Christian. And Elisha knew it was time for the foreign neighbor to the north to receive yet another testament of God's love for them. So he calls for blindness. Elisha leads the blinded and confused army over the road, the whole 10-mile journey to Samaria. And once they were safe inside the enemy capital, Elisha returns the vision to the soldiers of Syria. And they're in Samaria. Can you see them traveling the hills and glades, blind, led by the man they were seeking to kill, passing through village and town or farm along the way? And people looking at this spectacle of all these blind men following the prophet Elisha. Can you see them walking through the city gates and all the people along the road? Huh? Elisha prays one more time. So it was when they had come to Samaria that Elisha said, "Lord, open the eyes of these men that they may see." And the Lord opened their eyes and they saw, and there they were inside Samaria. Upon their arrival to the king's palace, Joram seized the opportunity to defeat his enemy in one strike. He was like, "Can I kill them? Can I kill them?" Jumping up and down. And the prophet forbids it. It was the law of war to treat one's captive enemy soldiers with respect and dignity. Still enemies of the state. But it would have been a terrible sacrilege to take their lives because they were without weapon and inside the enemy camp. Elisha instructs the king, however, to treat them better than captives of war. He tells them to set before them a huge banquet, a feast provided to the Syrian army. This feast was fit for a king, and according to the culture of the day, to eat it, to eat at the hand of your enemy is to proclaim a lifelong friend. They were treated like royal guests. And I'm sure Joram is like, "Prophets, oi." But Elisha was on a mission. So Joram prepared a great feast for them, and after they ate and drank, he set them away, and they went to their master. I wonder what story they told. What had the master commanded them to do? "Give me Elisha." And they go through all this experience, and they bring back a story of the prophet of Israel. "You won't believe what we experienced while we were there." It's his story. Can you imagine the story? So the bands of the Syrian raiders came no more into the land of Israel. And this state of peace continued on for many, many years. And when you read in the Bible this story, it's the next verse. Syrian is again attacking Israel. But many years transpire between verse 23 and verse 24. The kindness and mercy shown the captive army was not without effect. The fighting between the two nations ceased that very day, and the period of peace between them lasted for years. What did we say the other day about the power of a gentle answer? A gentle answer turns away wrath. Joram had accomplished by his feast what he could not have accomplished by force of arms. Kindness proved itself a more powerful weapon than the sword. When men do good to their enemies, they do good to themselves. God is kind not only to the righteous, but also to the wicked. We should be too. So ask yourself, are you locked in a battle with men? Are you fighting with another child of God? Are you arguing with your spouse, disagreeing with a neighbor, in conflict with a boss or a coworker? Have you locked horns with your brother or sister in Christ? It's important for us to realize what kindness to our enemy can do. We rent the church over at First Church to Trinity City Church. It's a Sunday-keeping church. And a couple of years ago, we began renting to them. And there are several in the church who feel like this is compromising our faith. But five times over the course of the last year and a little bit, I've had the opportunity to share with our renters the role that the Sabbath plays in our Christian walk. They have asked repeatedly, "May we use your sanctuary for a wedding on Saturday afternoon?" Now, there's nothing wrong with a wedding on Sabbath afternoon, but when there are cameramen and ladies in waiting and lots of decorating taking place and a catered meal afterwards, and it's just this big commercial event, suddenly it's not appropriate for Sabbath. At least that's the discussion we're having at First Church. And so I told them that the sanctuary was available for such a holy thing as marriage on Sunday afternoon or Friday before sunset, but not on Saturday. And I got to tell them why we believe what we believe. Over and over again throughout the course of the last 15 months, we have blown away their preconceived ideas about who and what Seventh-day Adventists are. These people that we rent to no longer hold to the popular notion that we are freaks belonging to a cult. They see us as Christians of the truest hue. Many times we found ourselves in conflict with our renters. It happens as soon as you sign the agreement. And every time there's been a conflict, they have witnessed in us how a Christian handles such conflict. And again, they're blown away. Even as recently as this week at our seminar, one of the non-Adventist guests in our church was blown away from what she had witnessed of our gentle spirit and our loving heart for Jesus and our fellow men. She said to me, "I'm confused. Are you the Seventh-day Adventist church or are you Trinity City Church? There's two signs outside." I told her we were Seventh-day Adventists. But don't you believe in, I mean, aren't you, you seem so different from what I had imagined. And from the tone in her voice and the expression on her face, I could tell she was pleased with what she was witnessing in us. She came back the next night. These are not our enemies. These are our guests. And they should be treated as if we were entertaining angels. And by the way, if you're not attending the seminar or you're not planning to be involved in the ministries of this church this summer to our community, I hope you'll reconsider. Maybe you've attended so many seminars like this before that you're like, well, I know everything. But please consider this seminar is primarily an opportunity for us as a church to meet the people of our community and to love them and persuade with kindness and truth that this is where they belong. We cannot do that from the comfort of our living room or these four walls of church. We need your smile. We need your expression of love. We need you to be where the action is. We have brought them into Samaria. They are our guests, and we need to put our swords away and lay a banquet feast in front of them and win them with our kindness and our love. So I want to encourage you to be Elisha. Don't let this prophet blind you, but let him open your eyes so that you can see what God sees and work for the salvation of people. May God bless you.